Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Man, I crushed Rattle Master.
Holy All right, let's just start again.
Yeah, cat. Why haven't we done this? God damn it.
15 minutes ago, we talked about shit that should have been on the cast.
All right, shut up, Jason.
Oh, I'm the asshole. I forgot.
Yeah. Nope. Shut up. We know where this is going. I'm not going to pull the thread.
We're 100 and some episodes deep. We know this routine.
Every fucking week.
Everyone else
fucks up.
There
was that one week where we're like, oh, we recorded all that. We're fucking done.
No, not this time. Every time I'm going to start, then Jason wants to interrupt and start some tangent, and then we go down the path.
That's what I was going to do. God damn it.
Where's the League of Legends talk? Oh, no, stop that right now. Because this is Brainstorm Brewery.
Dude, world started. We could talk League.
No. This is Brainstorm Brewery right here. This is episode 116. We are back. We've got Ryan. Ryan's back again. Ryan, are you glad to be here?
Yeah, my one bar of service at 3G was not going to operate to be able to make me podcast last week. I was on a fishing trip, and I did not play any Magic, and all I've done is look at the spoilers. So,
did you catch fish?
I did. I caught salmon in the river, and it was awesome, and it was well worth not playing Magic, though most people listening to this podcast probably don't believe that.
And so that's Corbin there questioning Ryan if he caught fish, just like he was questioning me, Marcelo, when I made my picks yesterday. I mean, last week. Sorry, yesterday, whatever. Last week. Especially like Soren. Let's not get into that one. And Jason. Jason, he didn't like my picks either. Jason, what do you got to say about that?
I still don't like your picks. I think whatever stupid bird they get paid for, $4 mana to put a counter on something, I'm really glad I'm on the that will not be a dollar side of the FOGO bet.
Yeah, whatever. Well, there's one pick that I know that I didn't make yesterday, or we all said was bulk, and I think we're going to have to eat some crow, and that's going to be for Jeskai Ascendancy.
I wasn't here. No,
let's hear about the combo. I don't even know what the combo is. Marcel's been teasing us.
So this is the combo. It's kind of weak. I mean, there's definitely ways to disrupt it, but... It can fight.
Let me get my browser window open so I can look up all the stupid cards you're about to say.
Alright, so this is a standard combo, not the modern Sprout Swarm combo.
No, this is called, I guess someone made one up. Now, I don't know if this is the exact list that I played against on Magic Online beta. A lot of people are asking what was the beta. This is the closed beta. This is what people, before the cards are released, Magic Online allows certain people to try to test out the bugs in the cards, so they give access to some people and you're allowed to build decks so that you can crash and try to break Magic Online to get rid of the bugs before they come out. So,
like Spire Spine Worm.
There's this one that was this, you should have seen. It was insane. Like if Brian Kibler would have got a hold of this one bug, it would have been just.
What was that, the Spire Spine Worm, where if you use it, the opponent can't make anything and they time out?
No, what it is if you put it on your own creature and it forces them to try to use your tapped creature as a blocker, because like Magic Online doesn't know how Bestow is.
Alright, well no, they had one End Hostility. You cast End Hostility and it would empty your hand, put it into your graveyard, and then take your entire sideboard and put it into your graveyard while wiping the board. So like
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
how you feel delve right
equipment
there.
And auras.
That's how I feel every Wrath should work.
That's
you know
the best
what you're playing Wrath? Fuck you. Put it all in the grave.
Delve's really good when you get to put 15 sideboard cards in when you cast a spell.
Yeah, and three of them are Soul of Innistrad. Like, oh, you win, right? It was the greatest. I was like, go ahead, cast that card. I know exactly what to do. I got you. Right here. But okay.
Oh wait, so it made your opponent do that, not you?
It made your opponent and you, both people.
Oh, so it just like dumps the entire board. Wow. Oh wow.
Yeah, it was stupid broken.
Spire Spine Worm was still better because it caused your opponent to actually time out, not just lose. Like they had to sit there until their clock ran out.
A guy actually 4-0'd a Moto Daily just as sort of like a, well, fuck you, this happened.
Oh. That's on the live too. That's how.
whatever. Yeah, like there was a huge Reddit thread about it, and like AJ Satcher was like, "How do I build this deck?"
Of course,
gamers I mean, gonna game.
Exactly, especially if you're gonna make it, it's gonna be broken in Moto, and you're gonna allow that to happen. Then why not? You know, just because.
Hey, let's talk League of Legends for a second. If League of Legends had a champion that did that, they would disable the champion, and like you wouldn't be able to pick it.
Sure.
So why doesn't Moto just take that? If they're not gonna fix it, take that card out of Moto.
But it'll be a bad experience for people that they would draft this card that they can't play with that could completely shut down the game.
Spire Spine Worm is a pretty serious business, Jason. You can't just go around taking it out of standard like that.
All right. Well, let's talk about – so I played against this deck and it pulled my pants. I was playing the Abzan Control deck or Mid-Range Control, which I think is a very solid deck, and I'm going to be playing it in standard. So this is like I think tier one deck definitely, and it pulled my pants down both times. Like, and I even sideboarded against it, and I couldn't win. So I don't know if this is the exact deck list, but this is somewhere down the line. So you're going to be playing off of Jeskai's Ascendancy. And for everyone that doesn't know what Jeskai's Ascendancy does, is whenever you cast a non-creature spell, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn, untap those creatures. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may draw a card if you do discard a card. So basically, you loot, your creatures get +1/+1, and you untap them. So the creatures that you play are either Kiora's Follower, or you could play the guy that untaps the lands, Rattleclaw Mystic, and Sylvan Caryatid.
Okay.
You also have Eidolon of Blossoms as a creature in there because that helps with the drawing cards and whatnot. So to get the engine going, you got Commune of the Gods to help, you know, find your creatures, fill up the graveyards, as well as Crucifix Insight, which will allow you to draw up to 3 enchantments and put them into your hand and put the other 6 into your graveyard. So they got a whole bunch of enchantments. They play 18 enchantments like a Stratus Walk. Which gives you, allows you to draw a card if you cast it, it costs 2. Nylea's Presence, which you enchant to land, draw a card. You got Kerametra's Favor, which draws a card, it costs 2, and then you could tap that any color. You have Dragon's Mantle, which, you know, draws a card when you cast it, and it costs 1 red there, and they play a Miser's Burning Anger. You also have Dig Through Time and Retraction Helix to play along with it as well. There's a combo of Retraction Helix. And you basically get a creature, 1 or 2 of these, tap creatures, and you just cycle through. You get Jeskai's Ascendancy, and you just start tapping lands, tapping these creatures, untapping them with casting these enchantments. Then you cast, you know, Crucifix Insight. You get 3 more cards, and then because you're cycling through the cards so much, because you're filtering with the Jeskai's Ascendancy, and you draw a card on top of that, like you just go through so many cards. You're untapping these creatures that generate mana. And they become +1/+1. So all of a sudden you get a Sylvan Caryatid to about 10, like a 10-13. Then you throw a Burning Anger on there. While you got, I've seen it was floating like 18 mana at one point. Throw that on there and just tap it, Burning Anger, hit you once, untap again, Burning Anger, you're done.
So you're describing it sounds a lot like the deck from Vertor we were talking about before the cast. The deck that played, I think it was Thassa's Ire or Ire of Thassa or something that you could pay like 4 mana to untap a permanent. This Ascendancy kind of seems like it takes the place of that card in this deck. Because like the Kiora's Follower and the Eidolon and all the enchantments, like that was a deck at the Pro Tour. So I guess we've seen a shell that can work, and Jeskai Ascendancy may improve that shell. I expected worse myself. This actually sounds like it could be a thing.
Yeah, I saw it. I was like, oh, this is dirtily. And I was like, oh, I could sideboard. I could beat this with no problem. Once I sideboard, I got all these cards. No, like you really got to be on it.
Was it on any sort of like Nykthos plan or anything like that?
The one I played against did have a Nykthos.
Market Festival?
This one does not. There's no Market Festival. It's just like, cause you, it could play through it. Like, if the creature's resilient, Sylvan Caryatid is great because it's hexproof. So you can throw all these things on there and just
keep the cycle going. Oh, and it makes mana, yeah.
Yeah, so you could keep the cycle going. And they could, I killed off 2 of the Ascendancies. I killed off a couple creatures. And he was able to do it with a Rattlecraw and 1 Sylvan Caryatid. And that's all he needed to go off. So, like, you got to take out the Ascendancies. And they could play the Ascendancy and just go off right then and that turn. So they could wait till, you know, they build up 6 mana going, throw the Ascendancy down and go off of the Dragon's Mantle and then go off on, you know, Nylea's Presence, just keep going through. And that's why they call it Ascendancy Storm, because like it just cycles through the deck, and it's like, wow, this is
interesting. Sounds like fun.
It's interesting. It's a combo in standard.
Did you Thoughtseize them?
I thought seized them for the first ascendancy, and then I took them out with the second one with an Utter's End.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulled the third one because he just going through so many cards.
Hey, interesting.
So, I mean, and you got to dig through time, you know, go through the top eight cards.
It definitely, I won't lie, it sounds pretty fragile.
It is fragile. It's not completely great, but I mean, at the same time, it's going to attack the different axis. So, you know, like people that are going to try to sideboard well for these other decks, this comes in as it's going to throw it off a little bit. It's like tier two, maybe tier 2.5, but it's definitely something that people are going to play with. And because it's a four of Jeskai's Ascendancy, like people are just going to play this, even if it's just a casual deck. Like casual players will love to have this infinite combo going on. Like, you know, if it's not a good deck, it's going to be a casual also.
Casual players don't play Storm.
This is not Storm. This is different.
It's called Jeskai Storm. You literally said that.
Yeah, but it's not Storm. They call it that, but it's not Storm. I mean, as a casual player, you want to play all these different ways to win Magic. This is a complete combo that that's like an infinite combo that can go off in a way. Like people want to play this.
It sounds like, maybe, I was with you. I'm with you up until we talk about casual players playing Storm decks or anything that resembles a Storm deck. But you know what? There was a shell of that at the Pro Tour that pros did show up and play. So I would believe that there's some potential there, which is why Thoughtseize is a broken card, right? Because it's just as good against this deck as it is against a control deck, as it is against the mid-range deck.
Yeah. Oh, see, on Modo, there's a casual room, or it's now called just for fun room. So there is a strong casual players that play these decks are just good enough.
Casual players don't play Modo either.
Well, there's a lot of people that are considered casual.
And even hardcore players don't play Modo.
I could understand, but
is that a good segue into what a broken product Modo is?
Let's talk about it some more. Yeah, go right ahead.
It's broken and it's bad, and people that get paid to make videos aren't making the videos because it's bad. And why is it bad, Wizards? Please make Modo better.
Thanks, Jason.
I was writing an article series. I was getting to get into Modo Finance, and I was writing the first couple articles. I'm like, this is really fun learning about Modo Finance. And then, like, it just didn't work. It was not a thing that was running on my computer. I got a new computer. That didn't help because they released the new version, and it's really bad, and there aren't as many bots as there were before because it's hard. I don't know if... See, we're not getting the cost of Nissa going down because nobody's redeeming sets of M15 on Modo. Are we going to see an attenuation in the amount of Modo redemption for Khans of Tarkir? And are we going to have to factor that in?
That would be cool, actually. And you would see an actual impact on the market. Like, you'd see financial...
But I think people will play Khans on Modo.
Oh, they're going to play it with two...
Or at least open it?
Yeah, they may pass M15, but they'll play Khans.
I mean, you'd hope so. It's so good. But there's, you know, people winning Modo dailies with, you know, bug exploits.
And you also have the worst standard ever, though, right now. So that's also a major factor. You know, Modo's heavily standard. And they're paying out in M15 packs right now. So it's like, you know.
But we have a combo deck. It uses Spire Worm.
It's not a Storm deck. That's called Jeskai Storm. That's not a combo deck. I guess it is. Yeah, you put the stupid worm on a hexproof creature. Yeah, it's a two-card.
No, you combo with Magic Online mechanics.
I mean,
it's a one-card combo.
Gamer's gonna game. So,
all right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some finance. How about we go into finance? People came here for finance.
How about some finance 101?
Sure.
All right. So finance 101 this week, we're talking promos. The reason we're bringing this up is because they kind of changed the way things worked in Khans, but we think it's probably a good idea to kind of talk about the promos in the past and kind of the market as it stands now, and then later we can talk about how it's going to change with the new system. So Jason or Marcel, anybody who wants to jump in, you know, why don't you kind of explain how promos, the price of the promos, whether it be a pre-release promo or something else, has kind of behaved over the past several years?
Really, the primary driver behind the price is scarcity. Sometimes how the card looks, how cool it is, you know, with the alternate art, different foiling process, that matters a lot, but what matters most is the scarcity. Because if they'd printed, you know, tens of thousands of Guru Lands, even as cool as they look and even as cool as that foil stamp is, they still wouldn't be able to maintain the ridiculous price a Guru Land is right now. but the fact that they were given away so infrequently just to people who did that whole process, they're the most, basically the most expensive basic land you can get. So other promos they've given out are judge promos that you get as being part of the judge program, and, you know, judging events. There was the DCI player rewards promos, and then you get down into the kind of promos that are like, well, here's your code for buying Duels of the Planeswalkers, go redeem this. Here's your promo for showing up at the pre-release. You know, everybody gets a pile of these. Here's a promo for coming to game day. So the more scarce they are and the harder get and the fewer they give out to people, the more they're going to be. So whether or not it's foil doesn't really matter as much as how scarce it is.
Right, because it's all about people who want to make their decks look cool. And that's why something, you know, like a pre-release promo, even if it's an Emrakul or a Wormcoil, it's just simply not as valuable as a regular copy because there's just so many more of them out there. But then you have something very exclusive like, you know, say Full Art Mutavaults that they gave out in Europe several, I don't know, 5+ years ago now, and they're worth $500-$600 a piece simply because they're so scarce.
Or the Judge Lightning Bolts, which were like $250 because they got an old frame and they're foil.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so there were foil and non-foil player rewards cards, and there actually was rares and uncommons within that, which I thought was cool. So it was like, well, you played in 30 events this period, so you are eligible for 2 foil Cryptic Commands. First of all, really, Cryptic Command is the magic card I played at the time that had the most text on it, and they made that textless. I thought that was funny. But then it's like, oh, here you get a bunch of Recollects and a bunch of mana tithes and blah, 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 but you get one of the foil full art textless damnations.
Damnation.
Or Lightning Bolt or Wrath of God. Yeah, those all looked really cool. And for a while there, when I was really grinding hard, I'd get player rewards mailers that were just super, like as thick as a deck of cards. You know, it's like, oh, you got 4 Wraths, you know, 2 Lightning Bolts, and here's a, you know, a bunch of the sealed packs of the dirtily stuff like Tidings. So
it is understandable, but unfortunate that they cut that program.
That was a good program for the people that played hard and played lots of events.
So what can people do now to get more promos, or, you know, if they want to increase their promo collection or if they want to target promos, what do you suggest they should do?
Well, I think the most important thing is to understand what you want and what they are. Like we talk about, the scarcity is the biggest driving factor. Another one is simply what they're played in. The people who want these cards are your legacy players, your vintage players, your commander players. Those are the people who want to, you know, quote unquote, pimp out their decks. So they want judge foils and, full arts, textless, stuff like that. You start talking about like your FNM cards, FNM promos that are only a standard playable card. Well, then, you know, that's something people don't care about near as much, and that won't really hold up over the long term.
So I would advise, the rarer something is, unless you're getting a really good deal on the trade, I wouldn't target it unless you have it, like, pre-sold. If you have somebody that's interested and they're like, hey, go get this for me, like, then you do that deal. But, I mean, like all scarce cards, you're going to sit on until you find that guy. A Guru Island looks cool, and, you know, those are pretty conveyable for cash. But some of the other promos, it's like, oh, I got these foil wastelands, and, you know, they look cool, but you might sit on them for a while. I don't target that stuff, but if I can get it for a good price, I'll pick that up. And there's always eBay for stuff like that. So you do have multiple outs. So I wouldn't shy away from that stuff necessarily if you have a lot of outs set up. But if you were just somebody that's looking to pick something up for long-term value, that's something everybody knows the price of. And if it's something like a wasteland that's eternally playable, there's always going to be demand for it.
But case in point, talking about the, you know, the liquidity of some of this stuff, I have some lands from the original Ravnica. I think they're arena lands. I don't remember. I have it. It's been a long time, and they just sat in my binder for literal years at this point without anybody ever even asking about them.
The expansion symbol says DCI.
Something like that. Yeah, I think they have like a gold thing on them or something. Or they may have a rare symbol. I don't remember. But I looked them up at some point in my life, and they're like $4 or $5. But nobody's ever even asked about them, you know. Like,
yeah, and they don't look cool. It's like why a summer land isn't really that pimp, because it looks like just a shitty revised land.
Yeah.
The fourth edition coloring, like no one cares.
Or it's so, like the Dragon's Maze promos that they gave out last year, or the Plains, you know, that everyone got. Like,
those went up to a couple bucks.
Yeah, like, yeah, same as those other lands. They're kind of cool, but the market for people who actually want those is kind of low.
You gotta find that guy who's got that mono white EDH deck that needs 35 of them.
Exactly.
So now we got these promos here from Khans of Tarkir. We have 40 different promos. There was 8 from each clan. They weren't alternate art, so that was probably a good thing, but they're all foil stamped. So Ryan, what do you think this is going to do, for the value of these cards and for their comparison compared to pack foils and pack regular cards?
I think it's really what we're going to see is, well, actually what I'm hoping happens is people still keep this mentality of, oh, it's just a promo, so it shouldn't be worth as much. And if people keep that mentality about it, then it's going to be very easy to be able to snag those nice and cheap. But I don't think it's going to drive down the prices of those cards in general as much as it would have before. And I don't know that it's even going to be that relevant. Like, Utter End is one of those cards, and I don't feel like that's going to have much of any impact on the fact that Utter End will be playable or how much it'll be worth if it's playable or not. So, I don't know. Like, we've never seen it before, right? So we don't know exactly what's going to happen, I guess. But my best educated guess would tell me that it's going to allow cards that before would have just been automatically dismissed as, you know, this is bulk. Even if it is slightly playable, it's just bulk because it's a promo. And now some of those cards can hold that $2 to $3 range that couldn't have done that before.
I wrote my article on QS about it this week. So anyone's a QS insider, you can check that out. I might see about getting this unlocked because this is something I think people should read. And I want to see if people agree with me, so I'd like more people to read it. I said they're 40 times as rare as any other promo in the past. They're 8 times as rare as the ones from M15, but the M15 ones were middle-of-the-road dirtles, right? Like, mm-hmm. You had Siege Dragon, and that was it. You didn't have every red rare, you know, as a potential. So people are talking about assembling a set of all 40 would be a thing for collectors. All 40 cards with the promo stamp as a 40 set. Is a thing for people to aspire to collect. And if you're, and before when stores did the promos, Wizards would send them big old full packs of them. Just shrink wrap. Like here's 200 promos. You know, you have 200. Now you get one per clan pack. They are sealed inside the clan pack. So when they started doing that with the guild pack and that sort of thing, the number of promos that the stores got, it was one for event, not like here's 300. You know, put these in your case when you run out of ones to give away. There's one per clan pack. So, the fact that there's, you know, one per 40 clan packs on these rares, you are looking at set foil numbers, you know.
So you think.
If there's 36 rares and 15 mythics, your 1 in 40 is looking like pack foil numbers on buying boxes rather than, you know, pack non-foils. Cause you're looking at, there's one or two foil rares per box, and if there's 53 possible cards, you're looking at a 2 in 53 chance of getting any given rare or mythic out of a booster box. And that's close to your odds of getting, you know, out of the clan packs. If you just do it blind and assume you have a 1 in 40 chance of opening any given clan pack, because that's not the case, but if you're looking at just the ratio of the two numbers to each other. So yeah, I think that these will hold their... I think these will be closer in price to the set foil and not the set non-foil like we've seen in the past. Like a Wyrmcoil Engine, the promo is close in price to the non-foil, not the foil. The Emrakul is close in price to the non-foil, not the foil. But I think these will be close in price to the set foil, especially for the good playable cards. And I think, like a lot of people are saying, collecting a 40 set of all 40 pre-release stamped cards and putting that in your binder, that could be a thing for people. So these are unprecedented, but it's every time Corbin tries to say something, I'm going to interrupt him.
I think you definitely have a good point on the rarity of them. I wonder if it's going to be possible, you know, for that to get past that kind of that, like Ryan said, that mental block with people. I mean, collecting them, I'm sure there's some people who are going to do it. On the other hand, collecting 40 different cards every 3 months that are difficult to find probably gets old pretty fast. I don't know how many people are going to go that route. But I do think it's a good point about how rare they are. If people, the other thing you have to look at is, you know, for that person who wants a set foil, who wants a foil copy of the card, the goal of it is to pimp out the deck. And, you know, there's still that mental block that, oh, this has the pre-release date stamped on it, that's not pimp, I think that that hurdle may be difficult to overcome, and anyone who's going to take the effort to foil their decks will still go for a set foil. But in terms of strict scarcity, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, so it's just going to be a mental thing for people.
We may see just as many people like, oh, that's cool that, you know, it's not alternate art. It's the same art. I'm not saying it's the same number of people. I'm just saying those could offset each other. It's...
Well, the issue is like if you have a legacy deck and 56 of your cards are set foil and 4 of them have a date stamped on them, you know, that kind of breaks what you're going for there.
Oh, okay. Well, let's move on. I think that's enough of it. You got an email for us, Corbin?
Yes. Well, we got a couple today. Let's start with this one from Nick Kaz, because it ties into what we're just talking about. He says, hey guys, a couple of quick questions. Try to keep it short. I want to pimp out my gifts deck with that sweet Judge promo Elish Norn. However, not only is she almost impossible to find, she's outrageously expensive. I have no idea how to predict her price trend, nor any idea how large supply is, or how many, if any, remain to be open. Is there a best time to buy in, or at least is there a least worst time?
It's $550 now. I remember last time I checked.
Woo! He's talking about the Elish Norn that has Phyrexian text on it.
It looks sweet. It looks juicy. But at that price, I mean, goodness, that's like, would you want that or would you want the full frame foil Mutavaults?
Wow. If he's trying to pimp out his gift deck here, it's a one of, right? And if you're going to pimp it out, man, don't screw around with the foil Elish Norn. Go all the way, right? I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah, so what would you do? Do you think there is, so what about this and say like the, foil Force of Wills? You think they're going to reprint those again, or they're just going to let those be as expensive as they are?
I don't think that they're going to reprint them soon.
They will reprint Force of Will, but it probably won't be that Force of Will.
Oh, well, that's interesting too. I think that there will be some reprints of them. The more will get out there a little. I don't think that Elish Norn price is going anywhere, to be honest. I don't think it's coming down.
I don't think it's coming down, but I don't think you're going to just see a big jump anytime soon.
I mean, if you want to compare to those Mutavaults, like Marcel said, they've been in that $500 to $700 range for years. And it's a big range, but like there's so few on the market, it depends like where you get them. But I haven't seen any of them more expensive than that or less expensive than that. And the Elish Norn's probably the same way. Like it's just you're not going to see a lot of trend. There's going to be kind of the range of it and it's going to very slowly move.
What about selling those then? I mean, you're going to spend $500, but the buy list is going to be $300?
Well, he wants it to pimp out his deck, right?
But say, you know, worst comes to worst and he has to sell his deck. Like how good of an investment is that for him, or is that really just a bad investment?
I think it's probably a pretty good investment because you go to wherever you bought it from and it's not a card you have to buy list. I guess you put it that way. There are enough resources on the internet to hook you up with somebody who wants to buy that card for more than a buy list will. So I think that stuff like that is a pretty solid investment.
All right.
Next one here from Andy Parsons. He says, dear Branson Brewery, let me start by saying I love your show. You make me laugh, and although I'm no spectator, I found the whole finance, economics, magic fascinating. You guys do a really good job of bringing what could be a really dry subject to life. I thought I'd send an email with my comments on the set review shows, as I know on the cast you mentioned how difficult they are to do. We have... All right, he says, the problem as I see it is that it's not very interesting or hugely relevant to assess every card, though I imagine that some speculators out there really want something like that. The other problem is that time restraints mean unless you do a limited resources-style marathon, there's a danger you guys spend too much time on less relevant cards because there's always disagreements, which is what he loves about the cast, but he says that's to the detriment of discussing the cards that really matter. My idea, instead of doing all the rares and mythics, is that you do a limited number of cards. You can do it on the basis of categories, such as cards to avoid, cards to trade, cards to cash buy, etc., where each presenter picks their top three. Or you could have each host pick a number of cards to discuss. That way the show might be more focused and less painful to do. He says he's thinking of you, Jason, and there's no need to thank him. So that's kind regards, Andy Parsons. That's Andy's suggestion. The funny part about this is that I saw this email come through the inbox. And then a couple hours later, I saw an email from Jason come to the inbox replying to this message. Right before we started the cast here, and I'm pulling up these emails they read on air, I look at it, and I noticed that Jason didn't actually respond to Andy like he meant to. He did, however, send an email to the rest of us.
I hit reply all. Damn it. I should reply to everybody. So I sent it to everybody but the intended recipient, so.
I was like, that's a nice email, Jason. Taking time to email your readers? Oh, wait.
That was a nice, thoughtful response that he'll never see because you didn't send it to him.
Jason, why don't you just answer it on the cast then? What are your thoughts?
Can I read the response I already typed
up? Absolutely, because you did put in the work. You might as well.
Yeah, that's, man, Gmail's hard. It's not something easy to use like WordPress.
Subtle Ryan dig there.
I did something way stupider than Ryan, and I'm still finding an opportunity to.
Yeah, I mean, even I know how to use Google, like Gmail. Although Corbin was having a tough time getting logged into his Google earlier.
Oh, so. That was true. He was like, what's going on? Show us a plank.
Google Docs was giving me some trouble. I did, however, figure out by myself. Jason, why don't you read your email?
Okay. Well, dear Andy, you'll never get this email because I didn't send it to you. We haven't really done two set reviews the same way, have we? I think yours is a good suggestion. Our current insistence on getting through everything is that we feel like the set review episode should be, in quotes, special and be longer than a typical episode, but we never want to talk about bulk rares for 2 hours. I like your suggestion, but I also worry that we wouldn't have discovered that we didn't agree on a card like Rashasa Death Dealer, and that led to a good discussion. We're taking your email under advisement because 2 years is an unreasonably short amount of time to lock in a good method for reviewing sets. We should have it nailed by the time they fix Moto. Thanks for the note, Jason. And then I included a picture of my dick that Andy's not going to get, but... And Corbin's seen it already, so that's too bad.
That's a small envelope.
The set reviews...
Oh, a small envelope, Marcel said. What a zinger.
I mean, the set review is basically always a work in progress, and you guys out there let us know what you want. I mean, I do think there's some value to doing every card because you want it to be, you know, timeless for posterity. That way when something that we all just dumped on comes back to be insane, we're there and everyone can look at how stupid we are.
The worst part about it is we've all been, like, it comes up to set review time, and each one of us is like, oh, we should do it this way this time. And then it always comes back to, like, the exact same.
Exact same, yeah. I suggested this last time when we did it with Sheldon. Remember, I sent you guys, let's do this category, and you guys are like,
There's so much involved.
Right. Especially like, when you have a guest, because, like, yeah.
I mean, for me, it really does come down just to the issue of, like, it's an issue, it's a matter of record. You know, you want to have your thoughts out. You need to say something. That way, if a card spikes later and is insane, we don't get to say, oh, we just ignored it during the podcast because we knew it was good. When that's
bullshit.
We really
liked it. Yeah.
Right. Like
when we see Boros Reckoner, like, ah, that's like a 2 hour card. I ain't going to do more than that.
Some of us.
I think we were all very enthusiastic about Boros Reckoner. I was so enthusiastic that I interrupted you. But we all said, we all got the price wrong. And then Ryan said it would be a bulk rare because...
I picked it.
Yeah, no, I was 100% wrong on that card. Yeah.
I was all about that card for going to like $6.
Yeah, right? I'm like, this card's so good, it might maintain its pre-sale price.
Well, it was like $2. When I wrote about it for QS, it was like $2. I was like, this seems like a solid card. It could be $5-$6 maybe.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Still hate
but
that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the value to doing every card. So, you know, it is just kind of a trade-off.
It happens like Rabblemaster recently.
That's, yeah. I mean, we all liked Rabblemaster too, and we were all wrong about the price. Like, Rabblemaster in a vacuum, you know, is about a $2-$3 card maybe, but in the context of the deck it's in and the set the way it is right now, that's stuff that's harder to evaluate. And as we get better at it, we would like to have a record of every card. You know, so
yeah. You could have a record of last week when I called Soren and they were like, "Ah, this card is a $10. This is a $5 card."
This is a nice segue into Marcel blowing himself. So
I would just like to point out the buy list on Soren is still under $10.
I know. I never said it was going to be a $30 card. So
well, okay, Marcel, let's just talk about Soren because it's worth talking about. Corbin and I see it was weird. There was like a bizarre like if. If Soren had been a $30 Planeswalker presale, like every other Planeswalker ever, we wouldn't have had the conversation and be like, yeah, $30 is too much. But it was at 15 and now it's up to 30. So what do we think is going on here, guys?
I think some pros wrote about it. Some people started buying them, and the set hasn't even released yet, so there's that few on the market. That's what I think.
Because I think they're like, oh, it went from 15 to 25 on TCG Player, but that was accomplished by buying fewer than 20 copies of the card.
Exactly. I don't think it means a ton.
And you see Sarkin, he's about $30, and Sarkin would like to see more play than Sorin will.
Right.
So,
and Xenagos is certainly going to see more play, and it's like $17. Like, long term, obviously it can't be 20 plus because we had the whole conversation about how Jace, wasn't able to hold that, you know, whatever. Like, it's just, I think it's just this week, there was a pre-release. People got to see it. It's clearly powerful at the pre-release, blah, blah, blah. There's still not any copies on the market because nobody can open the product yet.
And people want to play with them, and people will want to play with them at the Pro Tour or whatever may the card be. There's going to be such a short supply that you'll see that with some Planeswalkers that are playable. Well, they'll maintain or exceed their, you know, pre-sale price, at least for the short term.
And I mean, honestly, if you think about it, like, this started low for a Planeswalker. Most Planeswalkers start 20 plus and come down. Like, this is right now is exactly where it has been. Where most Planeswalkers are at this point in their lifetime, this one just started low.
And the reason it started low,
it's
because it just looked crap on the surface. I thought it was not that great of a card. And then, you know, there's these cards like Empty the Pits that just look like a bad card. These theory cards that don't look good until you actually put them into practice. And you're like, oh, this is actually a card.
I mean, I still don't think Sorin's very good, but I'm saying, like, I don't think that the price change from last week to this week is indicative of the card taking over standard or anything like that. I think it's more just normalizing to where most Planeswalkers are at this point in their life cycle. And it's still going to come down.
Scarcity, casual demand, and like any sort of modicum of standard playability and hype is all going to almost enforce between $25 and $35 for
pre-sale.
Before people are opening packs.
Yeah, the pre-sale price.
So even with Sorin going up by almost 100%, in price this week, I would still wait. If you don't need them right away, I would wait because I think they're coming back down. They can't maintain $30.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Right.
But, I mean, Nissa isn't seeing enough play to justify its $35. And I'm thinking maybe, like, a total lack of Moto Redemption and a total lack of people giving shits about opening M15 is keeping that price up.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, I think it's the nobody wants M15 thing, right? We've seen core set Planeswalker, core set Mythics the last couple of years stay really expensive. Like, Sublime Archangel was 20 plus while seeing no standard play, and it took until rotation for that thing to drop. So, I think it's just the core set problem.
And it's good that we have the core set entirely figured out just in time for there not to be core sets anymore. Because what, M16 is the last one ever, so.
Yep.
But, I mean, they acknowledge that's a problem, and look what it's doing to some of the prices on some of these cards. So it'll be refreshing not to see core sets anymore.
All right, so let's talk pre-releases.
Ryan, how was your pre-release? How's the salmon out there?
Fantastic. I am actually currently eating some right now.
I was going to say with a mouthful of salmon.
Yeah.
Didn't even cook it. It's so good you can eat it right off the bones.
So, what did you put on your salmon? Give us a breakdown of your deck tech for the salmon.
Well, there was one evening of smoked salmon. There was another evening of baked salmon. And then, I don't know how
strong.
I don't know the lineup for salmon is exactly, but it was delicious. Like, does that count?
Smoked and baked? Is this the salmon or you're talking about?
Both. Well, right. No, the salmon.
Okay, so what about you guys? Because I didn't get the pre-release. I had to work.
Oh, you didn't get the pre-release either?
No, I had I had two 12-hour days back to back that said no. Oh, wait, no, actually, I did. I got off at 5 hours on Sunday, and then I called everywhere, and they were all sold out, and I was like, oh, well, whatever.
Blown out.
I got my fifth choice of guild, so that was cool.
I did that.
I was like, I want anything but Sultai, and I got Sultai, and you know what? I X1'd. I had a great time. Delve is very powerful. Those stupid 4/4 apes that you can, like, delve into.
That you can delve, yeah.
They're so good. Even if you're delving one card to make it cheaper, like, this is a good set to have 4/4s. But I said this on Money Draft, and I'll say it here. I really think this is kind of a swing for 16 format sometime. Cause I had my opponent was at seriously 17 life, and I swung with Rakshasa Vizier, and he didn't block it, and I just delved the Become Monstrous or whatever. and just like immense. Crack them. Become immense, yeah. Yeah. So you dredge, you delve away five cards and put five counters on the Vizier, make it a 9/9, and then it gets +6/+6. I hit him for 15.
Ridiculous. I have same like, experience. Flying Crane Technique.
That's an overrun.
Two creatures dealt 18 damage for me and won the game with Flying Crane Technique. It's just an absurd card. So,
yeah, I mean, in limited, I don't think it's going to impact standard. Well,
yeah, obviously.
But, yeah, boy. Because I was looking at that, I'm like, yeah, we've seen enchantments that give the creatures lifelink and double strike before, but that flying matters so much. Because a lot of the Jeskai stuff has flying already, but.
Yeah.
Honestly, the thing I like most about limited for this set is every shard has its own, like, two colorless and one shard color creature that has morph, and you could morph it for a similar cost to that, and all five of them are really solid. You got a 4/4 lifelink, you got the 3/4 that loots when it hits them, and I think if you go into limited, just basically taking any of those at common, you'll probably get them decently late. Just pick Mana Fixing in pack one and take a bunch of cards like that. You know, you can put in removal because you're five colors. This is, you know, something Ryan has always advocated, is playing five colors in limited sets with really good Mana Fixing. We saw first pick Trilands before in Shards block. I think you first pick Trilands in this because there's so many spicy cards. Like, their power level is not attenuated. They sort of made it balanced by giving it a restrictive mana cost rather than attenuating its power level. So everything in the set's really powerful, and if you can cast it, you're going to have just a nutso deck. I don't think you go for synergy necessarily. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a very good Delve deck. There'll be a very good Outlast deck. But I think five-color good stuff is just going to smash everybody because you don't have to pass good stuff because it's not in your colors.
Well, yeah, I think that like Abzan and Outlast was, you know, was far and away the best choice for the pre-release because it's such a slow format, so you actually have time to outlast all your guys and get them going. Not to mention you had the chance of opening Dune Blast, which was nuts. But I mean, so like, what did you guys think playing with the part where everyone could have one of eight different promos in their seated pack? Or
it solved the problem. So you remember when you were bitching because everybody wanted the black one?
Yep.
Yeah, and then Aaron Forsyth was on Twitter, probably knowing that they were going to do this, and he couldn't say, look, we got it solved next set, just shut up. He had to, like, eat everybody's crap and be like, oh, yeah, it's a really interesting move. So I'm sorry, Aaron Forsyth, that you had to listen to everybody bitch knowing it was going to be solved. This was perfect. Everybody gets a playable card, and, you know, you have a 1 of 8 chance, and so there are better ones and worse ones, but it's still playable if you end up in that wedge. Like, I had absurd Mana Fixing because my clan pack had my Triland and it had two of my, two of my, the refuges. I had the green blue and the blue black and a Triland and banners. I had such good mana, I cut banners.
I wish I had done that.
Those clan packs are just so good. And the fact that it's not obvious which promo you get. Which was the problem before, is like, well, why would you not pick black? Because black is that promo. The fact that, you know, you're getting a random one, I think solves the problem everybody had. I think this was a very elegant solution.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it certainly made, you didn't have to worry about it. You know, you didn't go into every game thinking, oh, I've got to face Indulgent Tormentor this round. You know, you just got to play and everyone had some sort of good card in it. It felt very fair. So it was definitely a good change overall, and if they're going to continue to do these seeded packs moving forward, I hope that they continue this. But I'll actually make like we're talking a little bit about actually playing limited here. I was operating under the assumption that the banners kind of were half a land, you know. So if you ran, you know, 16 land and two banners, you know, that was kind of an acceptable thing to do. And that was wrong. Because I lost several games. I did very well. I played in three. I split the finals of two of them and scrubbed out of the third one. But I lost a lot of games to having two lands and then like dying with two banners in my hand without ever casting them. So it feels really bad to keep two land, two banner and never cast a spell. So I think that is a lesson, especially when you get to draft where you cannot stumble at all and miss a land drop like that. I think the banners are blessed. They're
God,
certainly
the banners
good.
Are so good.
But you have a lot to do on turn three, like, that isn't cast a banner.
If you listen to Limited Resources, they actively do not encourage you to play banners. Maybe a one, maybe two.
If you have to have the mana fixing, you have to have the mana fixing.
Yeah, it's mana fixing and acceleration at the same time is where you really benefit, because at three.
The issue is that you generally want to be morphing.
They're not signets, that's for sure.
Yeah, you want to be morphing a creature on turn three.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to do in this format, but I can't wait to play it. I think it's going to be fun. Just looking at the lack of as many three colored cards as there are and how they're in the higher rarities means that you're going to see a lot of two colored decks in draft, and they're resplashing the third color, I think.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a lot of openness, and you know, at least for the first pack, you may see, you know. So I think I really like that part of it, because that was the downside to Dragon's Maze, was that, you know, you had all these cool gold cards, and then the best thing to do was really to pick a monocolor card. So I think, you know, they kind of just pushing that you should get into the monocolors and then naturally go into your clan.
Yeah, I think that the red-black raid deck is probably insane in draft, and you just never play white cards and just be consistent while other people play tap lands.
So that's Brainstorm Brewery.
Really?
And this is Meandering Time Warp Turtle. And we're out this bitch, you.
I'm Meandering Tower Shield. I'm gonna help you beat Control now.
No, it's for Control to beat aggro without killing its own creature.
I watched that card kill somebody. It took four turns, but it dealt 10 damage.
Aha.
Oh. That's gonna be what
they should have made a rabbit creature that like had haste and double strike. And then we could have seen if the tortoise could beat that.
You should put that on the brew bounty docket.
There you go.
Meandering Tower Shell?
Yes.
Why don't you just play Tanny Wow while you're at it and have a 7/7 phasing instead of a 4/5? Oh, nobody remembers Mirage Tanny Wow except me and Ryan.
I do.
I sure
don't. I was going to say, I'm over here chocolate. I just picked a couple of those today, actually. It's a rare out of Mirage. It is phasing. It's like a big dirtly dude, and it's terrible.
It's like a 9-mana 7/7. They thought, like, giving blue a creature bigger than Sea Serpent that didn't have a drawback was good enough. They're like, Vizardrix, here you go. Huh. Have a 7-mana 6/5, and we'll call it a rare in blue.
It flies?
Hey, it's
a
6/6.
It was ground. Right?
Oh, I don't know.
Vizardrix did not fly. And neither did Tanywa. Tanywa was like a 7/7 for like...
Sorry, I'm not as old as you guys.
Yeah, and it like has phasing and like some of your lands. I think.
So,
but like all your lands phased out when it came in or something like that.
No, we're gonna educate the people. They need to know what Tanywa does.
No, this is brought to you.
My favorite blue creature was Leviathan. That was my shit. That and Norbit. Or Norbert.
Alright.
Norrat.
There you go.
Norrat. There you go.
Oh, no. Oh, it's even worse. It only costs 5 mana, and it was a 7/7. Phasing and trample at the beginning of your upkeep, all of your lands you control phase out.
Ooh. Oh, so it was cheap, and that was its severe drawback was phasing and land phasing.
Nobody listening to this cast even knows what phasing does.
Oh yeah, tell us.
Educate
them right now.
This is today in history that nobody cares about in Magic's past.
No, I don't want to get into phasing. If you want to know phasing, go read the comprehensive rules. I'm not even doing it. It's like asking me about banding.
Or read Meandering Tower Shell.
Well, so yeah, basically that. At the end of your turn, you take it out of the play, and then you return it back at the beginning of your turn, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And then like anything that's phased out can't phase out like. There's a way, so essentially everything that's out comes back in, and everything that's in comes out. And there's all sorts of weird tricks because you can give things phasing and stuff at certain times. It's fucking weird.
Teferi's Veil was pretty good. Your creatures that attacked phased out so they couldn't be killed by wraths and shit. Which was-
Sounds like fun.
For blue aggro. Hey, it was a merfolk card, Corbin, you should like it.
I might have liked it were I, you know, playing 30 years ago. 20 years ago.
Oh, ouch.
When these cards came out.
30 years ago? Try 18.
Oh, okay. My bad. I'm sorry.
How long is it? No, Corbin. That's as bad as you saying, like, fucking revised power. Stop it.
Except that didn't happen. That is still just a fairy tale.
No,
that is still
happened.
A story that never happened.
No, that did happen.
Listen to Fox News right here. trying to spin that story. Oh my goodness, Corbin.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, Ryan.
There's no evidence that that happened.
Just because recorder didn't record and you got away with murder.
It didn't happen.
You got away with murder.
Wait, so you're just steadfast?
I am so tired of being made fun of for something that didn't happen. I'm done.
Wait, when did you take the stance that it didn't happen? I didn't know we were in denial now.
When did you take
the
stance?
He's got a fucking revisionist history on us.
Yeah, like before you were like, oh, that really sucked when that happened.
All right, produce the evidence.
You just did it right now. Wow.
Oh, no.
I think we have you admitting that you at least did say revise.
I don't even know what we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Because knew Ryan was the ones like, that can't go out on the episode. No one will take the four of us seriously ever again. You have to bury that in the desert.
I sure hope nobody ever misspeaks on this podcast ever again. Please don't ever say the wrong word, okay, guys?
Corbin, you should be a politician. You got a bright future in there.
Oh.
Just don't ever say revised when you meant to say unlimited, or you will never live it down.
Hey, I got made fun of for not knowing how to send a fucking email tonight.
No, and Corbin, it would have been fine if
Ryan,
it was
it's on
one time.
Ryan, it's on WordPress, bro.
Yeah, that's
it's on WordPress. Just go look it up.
No, just go look it up
on WordPress.
Hold on, stop. Mommy, Daddy, stop fighting. People don't like it when we do this.
Shut up, Marcel. You mispronounce every single word.
Oh, man. Phyrexio Nebulator.
Targo Moif.
Hashtag Goif. See you there, Vegas.
Hashtag
2015.
Hashtag Pons of Travis.
I did say that. Huh? And we're out of here. I'm going to stop now while I'm ahead. So.
Good plan.
Good night.
This episode got good at the end.
Spice.
Oh, that was fun.
Did that get recorded?
One can only hope.
I would hate to have to board a plane for Oakland and hit you with a pipe.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.